While this is loading up, I'll introduce myself. I'm Gloria Cron. I'm with the National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. And I have no conflicts to disclose, neither for myself. And I want to remind people that this report represents just my finding or my opinion and not those of the CDC or any part of the federal government. That business taken care of, we were asked to consider what factors should be thought about in developing a short set of questions to measure function and disability in children. So I will be presenting less about data or numbers and more about some of the questions that I think are important. We've had a great opportunity to hear about the mix and international use for screening questions. We've heard about the educational data systems and the services for the children with special health care needs screener. So it's great to have that as a context for thinking through what would be needed in order to measure function and disability in children. And we need the need to do that is really pretty evident. We are in the process, I think, of sorting that out for adults, measuring disability in adults or identifying disability in adults for surveillance purposes. The need now is to do something very similar for children. And that allows or requires defining conceptually whom we're talking about or what we're talking about in order to allow us to be counting children wherever that is needed and necessary. Also to measure disability because that might be in various levels of severity. We're certainly moving to that, an understanding of the need to do that or the desire to do that in the adult literature. And then would this be a measure that would be suitable for using to correlate with other outcomes, either as a mediator or a moderator. So just to be thinking that those are the ways that we now think we would love to use this kind of a measure. The issues are many, as has already been implied. The question really is, what are the limitations or areas of functioning that are of importance in children? Are they the same ones as in adults or not? We've already seen efforts at looking at vision, hearing, mobility, problem solving, emotional regulation. We know that perhaps there's not as much going on around behavioral disorders. Is that an area to measure in children or not? I think those are questions to ask and answer. The second issue really relates to developmental changes, and this is the real, it's the pleasure of working with children, and it's the challenge around measurement, I think. We have to be thinking about when is a functional limitation simply developmentally normative, and when is current functioning really reflective of delay? Questions on walking or mobility are very obvious. We don't expect that and don't expect to see that in more than half of the children until at least age 12 months. So how do you ask a question? So we saw something about previously about asking about delay in mobility. I think some of the other questions, what are the ranges of typical development? We need to know something about that. Can we expect every child to walk at 12 months of age? And we know the answer to that is no. So what are the ranges around normal development? And when is functioning regarded as limited, and when is it still within the normal range? A third issue that I'd suggest we really need to think about is what's the likelihood of diagnosis? Many of these are going to report on parental or rely on parental report. What's the likelihood of diagnosis? Now, that varies from functional limitation to functional limitation. We know that children who are at school entry are found to have significant hearing loss. Only about half of those children were picked up through infant hearing screening. So does that, we suspect some of that is later onset of hearing loss, but when does that happen? And the fact that some children are only getting picked up when they enter school, what does that mean for undiagnosed hearing loss? And if we'd asked the question sooner, what reliability would there be for parental report? Just questions to be asking. The third is this issue of parental or or caregiver report. In adult surveys, we would call that proxy reporting. In children, we call that required reporter. But we do need to know more about what are the variants around parental reporting, and for what functions is parental reporting or proxy reporting more reliable, and when is it less so? We know for adults that anything that's more internal or subjective, other reporters, proxy reporters, are just not good reporters for some of those issues. And then finally, we've already heard inferences around cultural and cultural context and interpretation of questions and meaning of normality within different cultures. So just things to questions to be thinking about as we move forward with that. And I am much better at asking questions than I am in giving answers. What I'd like to do is give just a couple of examples of identification of some of the work that we have done. I was pleased to see that I was going to be following Steve on the children with special health care needs, so I will not go into any of the discussion of that, although having worked for a long time across the lifespan on disabilities, we would love it if there were a better crosswalk between child measures and adult measures. And right now, Services for Children with Special Health Care Needs Screener is one of the nicest state-based examples, along with the Department of Education data, but those things don't necessarily crosswalk over to the adult surveys that we have. But let me talk about two specific conditions. Now, this is not function. I'm making a deliberate shift here, and I'm going to talk about conditions. But they just give examples of some of the issues that we will encounter as we try to move forward with this work. This reflects data on essentially parent report of attention deficit disorder, and I'm presenting data from the National Health NHANES, somebody help me with the acronym. NHANES, regardless, breaks people in, and what needs to be asked through interview is asked through interview. It also has physiological measures, height, weight, and has some additional physiological measures. So in this case, ADHD is diagnosed through direct parent interview using the diagnostic interview schedule for children. And it's broken out here into without and with functional limitations, or impairments rather, which is the way the DISC operates. The last line reflects the National Health Interview Survey, and this is just a straight-up parent question of, has a doctor or health professional ever told you that your child had attention deficit hyperactivity disorder? What we see is that the prevalence rates here are really fairly similar. We would at least live with that amount of variability. And these data were selected by Melissa Danielson, who I think is potentially in the room, who helped run this for us, because they address the same time period, or relatively the same time period. More recently, in the past 8 months or so, we've had two studies coming out from two different data systems that both again show diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in children is rising, and again, both of those two prevalence rates were very, very similar. So it looks like for ADHD parental report, has your child ever been diagnosed? We do fairly well in terms of consistency of prevalence rates. Now, we tried to do something different around trying to get a prevalence rate for spina bifida, and I'll let me tell you about this little story. There is a lot of interest in understanding how many people are there out there, especially adults who have spina bifida. With modern medical advances, people with spina bifida live much longer than was the case 20 years ago, and we expected that the population would be roughly 70,000 in the U.S. based on incidence rates of spina bifida and then some projections from there. So some of our staff looked at the National Health Interview Survey, the disability supplement that was conducted in 1994-95, the last time that this kind of a comprehensive NHIS had this disability supplement to it. It asked, included in this, and I assume that most of you are familiar with the National Health Interview Survey, nicely representative sample of the population that allows for calculation of nationally representative population estimates. Included in this supplement or this survey was a series of questions that simply asked the parent, has your child ever been diagnosed with any of these conditions? And it had 10 disabling conditions, and one of those conditions was spina bifida. So far, so good. We thought we had good data to go with. When we started to estimate that or calculate that out, rather than being at 70,000, we were coming up to more like 161,000 people. Now, that in itself might not be so surprising. We're seeing that with some other conditions, where when we go back and have a deeper drill, population-wise, we find numbers that are higher than we might have expected. But in this case, we both found that about 80% of these were adults, which we would not have expected. And more importantly, almost half of them reported no limitations activities of daily living or instrumental activities of daily living. So not the classic presentation of spina bifida that we would be expecting. Instead, what we think we were likely or potentially picking up were a fair number of people who have been told at some point that they have spina bifida occulta, which can be fairly non-symptomatic and is sometimes regarded as even sort of a general variation of normal spinal development, but happens to have that term attached to it. So this is one of those examples where you think you're moving forward pretty well, and then you sort of have to stop and say, what is it that we really have here? So let me just talk briefly about measures across the life course. And this becomes even more important, I think, for children, where we're very interested in, generally, I think, public health is becoming more interested in not only cross-sectional snapshots, but really understanding issues, development, and health outcomes across the life course. And so measures that we would have for children, it's always the issue for assessment of children is it going to be, are the questions that we have, are they going to be appropriate across the different ages? The second issue that we really need to be thinking about is, will it be sensitive to or invariant to developmental changes, and how do we accommodate for that? And then ideally, if we were going beyond identifying disability to really measuring function, and we thought that interventions were improving causing a deterioration in function, would these measures be sensitive enough to pick up gains or losses in functioning? For some conditions that are deteriorative, this is an important issue. So somebody with muscular dystrophy, for example, and mobility or motor control, these are important measures to understand how a disease is progressing. I'm going to show you, the next slide I'm going to show you is a somewhat complicated slide, but it's a life course model that Mark Swanson and our spina bifida team have been developing. This is based on the International Classification of Functioning, although you might not see it immediately. But on the far left, we're thinking about body functions and structures as part of what goes into opportunities for development. And on the far right, what we're really interested in is looking at participation and quality of life as adults. And we're very interested in wanting to understand what happens across life course in order to be a better, predict to better or poorer outcomes in participation and quality of life as we get older. It breaks this out into four age categories, but they could certainly extend out farther. We're thinking specifically of preschool, school age, adolescence, and young adulthood. And in this case, we have broken out, or we've selected three domains from the ICF. We're looking at self-management and health, particularly self-care of health. We're thinking about personal and social relationships, and we're thinking about education to employment, knowing that all of that operates within a family or a context of family environment and personal factors. This is actually the template for website where we're now starting to populate information about within each of those boxes, but just gives sort of an overview of starting to think life course and what does that mean, having disability, and what does functional limitation mean in childhood as implication for moving into adulthood. So in summary, I'll just say that identifying function and disability in children and youth is very timely. I think we're really ready to move there. The questions are obviously challenging, but I think that now is the time to take that on. And from our perspective, at least, we think that application for life course analyses would be very valuable into the future. So that's my contact information. Thank you very much.